Lounge is by Lin Jin Chen. She actually did her PhD and the PSI program too here at PI and the supervision of Lee and Golan. Not here, but and then she went on to her postdoc at OIST, where she's now, which is this wonderful meteorological institute in Okinawa, Japan. And she's currently visiting PI. The floor is all yours.
Thank you, Beatrice. I think the mic.
You're on. I can see that.
Okay. You're good. Good. Thank you so much for the organizer to give me an opportunity to discuss about this question that has been in my mind for a while. And this is a perfect opportunity, I think, because in the audience, there are people from a variety of approaches of quantum gravity. There are people, oh, Carly isn't here, was originally studied this black hole entropy counting since 20 years ago. And there are holography experts and many more experts on discrete approaches of quantum gravity. So I think I will try to keep the talk that's at the background of general audience, and I will make effort so that everyone actually understand it. And I hope that during the talk, you can try to, because the formalism mostly is classical and very generic, and you can try to map the intuition here to your approach of quantum gravity. And hopefully either after the talk, you understood the question or think you actually know the answer is some mathematical theorem or something very intuitively can be explained, or you can have a new, probably new project related with some approach of quantum gravity and this perspective of black hole entropy counting. And so we know that deriving Bekenstein-Hawking entropy formula is one of the first testing ground of any theory of quantum gravity. And here, I want to discuss one particular approach. So I'm an outsider of the field and only know this since probably a year ago. And so this might be from like one people from outside the field look at it, what kind of thoughts it arises. And so when the organizer gave me the opportunity to talk like about a week ago, I really hope that I have an answer to this question. I was over ambitious, and but hopefully we are soon having a good direction of understanding it. So it was suggested 25 years ago by Carlip, who is sitting here, that black hole entropy might be completely governed by the symmetry on the horizon. And the present of event horizon as a separation or as a causal separation between different regions of space-time, the present of such a surface break diffeomorphisms, and which enhanced certain that pure gauge degree of freedom becomes the physical degree of freedom on the boundary of space-time. Actually, I was surprised that the idea was already there like 25 years ago. And the first example of using such idea of really deriving precisely certain black hole entropy formula was done by Strominger 22 years ago. And so Cardy formula is a very genetic property of the 2D, two-dimensional conformal field theory. So it does not really depend on the specific details of the theory, but as long as you have the Virozoro algebra that has the central charge arises in it, the density of state in the macrocanonical formulation is proportional to the square root of the central charge, with this delta is basically the eigenvalue of the zero mode of the Virozoro operator. So this part can be seen like the total energy of the system. And so this the first derivation does not based on although it was inspired by a large class of supersymmetric black hole who has a local, who is locally ADS near horizon, but globally and topologically might not. And at the semi-classical limit, which is large central charge limit, and the radius, it's, the ADS radius is much larger than the lambda. In this situation, one can compute the asymptotic symmetry related to BTZ black hole and applying the Cardi formula to get its Bekenstein-Hawking entropy.
Sorry, I have a naive question. Are deltas integer?
No.
They don't have to be.
No. So the delta, delta will be related to, with mass and angular momentum through here, and so L0 will be L times M plus J divided by 2. And so why it's closer to our real world was a work on 2008 on the extreme occurrence CFT duality. So I think this was the first time actually people have a real conformal, people have the real Virazoro algebra that corresponds to a physical system in the sky. So I think it's very exciting. So when we consider the extreme occur, which is given mass, that's the maximum angular momentum it can have, the two horizons or coincide with M. And then they were using a result on 1999 that to study the near horizon limit of a throat geometry. So which actually corresponds to, if you look closer enough to the horizon, and then, so we'll be close enough to the event horizon and zoom in that parameter. So this lambda goes to zero, but keeps this ratio fixed. And in this new coordinate that given by this rescaling of the near horizon region, they call it the throat geometry of the curve. And the matrix become this formalism. And different black hole characterized by the different angular momentum. And with a fixed theta, with the fixed angle, it becomes a locally warped ADS3 with the, we need the phi to be periodically identified. And then their idea is that map such would be quantum gravity theory with the finite temperature CFT. So this, so Kerr, extreme Kerr has zero temperature itself, but the CFT would have the temperature due to this periodic identification as 1/2 pi. And the asymptotic symmetry with this close horizon geometry, so which is I look close enough to the horizon and zoom in this region. And if we study the vector field and look at how it generates asymptotic symmetry transformations, which epsilon can be the arbitrary function depending on phi, and the phi is 2/2 pi periodically identified. And they discovered that the asymptotic symmetry algebra is one copy of Virazoro. And through the geometry, through this near horizon geometry, they can read out the central charge is 12J. And so here divide H bar by if I use the commutator rather than the Poisson bracket. And so we expand in the Virazoro mode when we consider like a Fourier expansion of this epsilon function. And then each Fourier mode, if you calculate its commutator, it furnished such algebra. So this idea of quotient of ADS3 related to the finite temperature CFT can be nicely applying the canonical Cardi formula, which is related to the microcanonical one. One can easily derive as the following. And then the people are very happy because this is such a simple derivation and we get the black hole entropy formula. And so I want to emphasize here is that the information input is really, really very little. Apart from the CFT temperature, we only need this central term coming from the geometry. And so as an outsider who saw this result for the first time, I was very surprised, and I'm sure that there has to be something deeper in code in this part from the gravity side.
But why is it justified to look at, from the curve side, why is it justified to look at theta equal to constant? You're fixing theta, right?
Yes, yes.
Wow, I mean, that seems completely arbitrary, right? Because it's not a symmetry, it's nothing, I mean, we're just looking at one fixed
yes.
theta.
Yes, so I would say that, so from their motivation perspective, they really want to find yes.
You want to get there, but still this, I mean, the assumption seems from the point of view.
With each fixed theta angle, we can have such a near ADS geometry. So this is like a local on the angles geometry, and studying each piece of the holographic CFT corresponds to the on the local theta.
I agree, but I mean, I don't see then why one wants to attribute that to the horizon geometry of curve if I'm looking at a fixed theta, because on the horizon, theta is not fixed. Curve. We can talk later.
I don't And so later the generalization, so here I only cited the work which is like the start point of that approach, because later then there's so big a community working on it. So in 2010, I think the author is one of the audience here.
She's left.
discovered there's a hidden conformal symmetry on the phase space of the near horizon. So this time, it's not the close horizon geometry anymore. It's look at the region of phase space that the energy of the mode with the radius times radius is much smaller than one. And what they were looking at is the scattering of scalar wave equation, and the absorption rate corresponds to the one in the CFT. And so that was the observation to find that hidden conformal symmetry. And for generic curve, the argument becomes, in my view, very shaky, because it needed to apply the Cardy formula actually outside of its validity of range, that it need the temperature to be larger, much larger, very high temperature to be valid. But in generic curve, that's not clear is the case. And also a very, very recent work by the Perry, Hawking, Strominger was using the Wald-Zumpass formulation, trying to fix the central charge and get the using Cardy formula and get the result. And so recently, I recently learned that Cardy trying to apply this idea on the very generic black hole. So if it is true, then it will be really marvelous that, so yeah, I think the expert is here. So I will just briefly mention that, so the horizon preserving diffusion are enhanced to BMS3 symmetry, which can be seen as a limit of Virasoro, and there's a corresponding Cardy formula and for the BMS3 symmetry. And then one can reproduce the Bacon-Hawking entropy for basically like a very generic black hole in four dimension. And so then I'm very curious about how does central charge encode the information of black hole entropy? And we all want to know what's the macrostate, what is really counted for. And in this field of curve CFT or holography, the answer will be very standard, is that it's a genetic property of 2D CFT that conformal symmetry is powerful enough to control the asymptotic growth of the state. And so such a universal formula will tell us that probably the macroscopic state are the CFT state in the holographic picture of quantum gravity. And there's more question arises as like how universal such a derivation is. Because for many years, people have to find one copy or two copy of Virasoro. And now recently, Carlip shows that BMS3 symmetry can also probably work, but it essentially relies on that actually the symmetry algebra have central extension. And this is generically most probably not true, because we know that in four-dimensional asymptotic symmetry, so far for the BMS4, we do not expect the central extension arises. This is due to the different cohomology between the diffeomorphism on a circle, which corresponds to 3D, the spatial slice of 3D, and the diffeomorphisms on a sphere, which they have the different topology. And so also we know that 3D CFD, there's no central charge at all. So is this a coincidence, or is this, well, certainly it's not a coincidence, but is this, I think it's like a very nice result. People can take inspiration and look deeper into what's this central term from the gravity side tell us about. Is there, so I want to ask, is there more universal mechanism from the gravity side we can find that the beyond what a 2D CFT could capture? And also, if such an approach is limited to the BMS3 and the Virasoro algebra, then does it mean that we need to take the insight of dimension reduction really serious? Because actually, in our four-dimensional black hole, the algebra really controlling the density of state is one-dimensional lower. So let's see how it arises in a very generic way. So I will start from the covariant phase space formalism. It's a formalism that's very suitable to study the degree of freedom in a gauge system, so that we can, so usually Lagrangian formalism, the gauge symmetry and it's manifest. But in Hamiltonian formalism, we usually in gravity need to decompose into the 3+1 decomposition and have laps and shifts and to fix the gauge to discuss about the time evolution. But here the focus isn't about the time evolution, it's about what's the degree of system, what's the degree of freedom in a system, and what's the Hamiltonian corresponds to a given phase space that's more than just the time evolution direction. Hence, this formalism suits it very well, and we do not need to break general covariance. It can be used in like any gauge theories and gravity. It has been developed since Perel, right down Perel bracket in 50s, and by Arby Wheaton and, sorry, I wouldn't pronounce it this correctly, and many, many other people. And very recently, actually, just a paper 2 months ago of properly describing adding the boundary term, which in gravity case would be corresponds to the Gibbons-Hawking boundary term in the spatial boundary for this formalism. So given any theory, let's start from Lagrangian. And so here also it's a very local formalism on the space-time point. And it's a space-time deform. And we do the variation. This is the typical way when people derive the equation of motion. We variate the Lagrangian. But usually, this boundary term wouldn't be of us interest because we want to find the equation of motion. Here, however, so this boundary term is called a symplectic potential. Later, I will discuss why it is important in the phase space. So it will be a space-time d minus one form and one form in the field space. So here might be, it was confusing for me the first time I saw it. So here, you actually need to think of two space simultaneously. One is the tangent space, cotangent space in the space-time. The other side is the space given by the configuration of field. And one is a variation on the field, is I use this type of delta. And so the if we look at the configuration given by the on-shell solutions, so it will be, so actually the structure of this space is unknown. People only know some examples such as asymptotic ADS with Brown-Hanau's boundary condition. It is Bernardo space that's given all the solution. Like the structure of such a phase space only studied for a very specific case. And so given this on-shell solution, one construct the symplectic structure associated to it by this, it will be anti-symmetric to form. And so to make it, to make a phase space into a symplectic manifold, we need it to be non-degenerate. But that is later, so this is a pre-symplectic structure of the phase space. It is degenerate, and one can check it is closed. And for QED, for example, it can be very compact, written as this form. Hence, one can notice that the symplectic form is defined without really choosing a gauge in the QED. And then for local covariant theory, we know that the traditional Noether approach cannot be applied directly because the Noether current constructed from the Lagrangian, if the theory is locally covariant, the charge is trivially conserved on shell. So this is a different with the slight difference with the current Beatrice discussed a couple days ago, is that so for the on shell current, I will probably discuss a bit that later. So when the symplectic current is trivially non shell by the Poincaré lemma, one can always find a function. So here we call it a Noether charge, but it does not generate symmetry actually. It's just for convenience, it exists such a function such that it characterizing that my current is conserved. And with some terms proportional to the equation of motion. So here the symplectic form is exact and my theory is locally covariant. And so then we need to look at given a Cauchy surface with boundary, we integrated the symplectic form on this boundary to get the pre-symplectic form corresponds to the Cauchy surface. And so because since the symplectic form is closed, then you can imagine that the two Cauchy surfaces, as long as they share the same boundary, you can move the surface up and down. The symplectic structure, symplectic form defined on these two Cauchy surfaces, that will be the same. And so this is so in the if my space-time have spatial boundary, then to study such a conservation of the symplectic form, you need to impose there's no symplectic flux through the boundary comes out. And with the sum over the boundary of the Cauchy surface, the symplectic form should be conserved. And so here I hand draw a picture to make this discussion more intuitive. So supposedly like this, this is my space-time. And I have boundary Cauchy surface. And so the field here, it can be some gauge field, it can be metric, it can be anything as has field value each locally at the space-time point. So this is a formulation of the theory. And then my variation of the field would be this whole Cauchy surface that is varying. And so one needed to look at the cotangent space corresponds to this field space and also the tangent space at the space-time. And so to discuss, to define like the Hamiltonian structure of this phase space, we need to map the space-time vector field to phase space, which is the vector on the phase space then generate the transformation corresponds to here would be my default morphism. And so this C with a hat is space-time vector and this is the phase space vector. And the degenerate direction will come to the the zero modes of such a symplectic form. And to get the, you are familiar with that, to get the physical phase space, you need to quotient such the degenerate direction, and then to reach a non-degenerate symplectic form. And so the large diffeomorphisms would correspond to one diagnostic for the large gauge diffeomorphism, or in other words, the diffeomorphisms becomes, rather than a pure gauge, becomes a physical symmetry acting on the phase space. One diagnostic way of seeing it is that it's associated with non-vanishing boundary charge. And so with the usual standard way of, in a symplectic geometry, how one find a Hamiltonian associated with a vector field, vector flow. So if the interior product of the vector field with the symplectic form is not exact, then one need to, this we wouldn't discuss here, but one need to use the what Zompa's counterterm analysis and actually that was in that recent paper about a generic curve that they studied the near horizon symmetry and analysis what kind of counterterm you need to add to make the Cardy formula gives the correct entropy expression. Oh, well, I would say that they got the counterterm and the entropy formula agree with the black hole formula. And so, but when it is exact, so which means there exists the Hamiltonian, and which is, it needed to be the field space one form, and it will be written as a boundary integral of this, of the charge on the density on the boundary, and which is a formulation that's related with just now that the northern charge and minus with the interior product with the symplectic potential. And so such a definition of charge, we all know that like in gravity, we cannot say you need to define the where is the reference point of energy? And similar as here, that one need to specify corresponds to one solution, what is the reference point of the charge? And then all the others variations on the top of this solution will be path independent, a definition of charge. So the how I see this is that this formulation is suitable to study once one know a certain class of geometry. For example, we need to study asymptotic symmetry, and we already know it needs to be asymptotic flat or anti-de-Sitter. And so we know what's the empty space, and the all the symmetry transformation that's given by diffeomorphism acts on the boundary was the whole space of solution that allowed that within such a transformation that will be the variation on the metric that relative to this base space, and this whole class of spacetime, the charge associated with each spacetime can be very easily defined in this way.
In all these things, the vector field has to be tangential to the boundary that you did not say explicitly.
Yeah, yes, yes. Yeah, so this is a few important points just to summarize so that everyone follows. And and the arises of central extension, so is when the charge is integrable, one can change where's the basis of the charge. And but when we say the central extension is non-trivial, is that the charge algebra under the Poisson bracket still comes out a piece that cannot be absorbed into the Poisson algebra. And so so this part signals that the Lie algebra between the vector field on the spacetime and the Poisson algebra of this charges are not isomorphic to each other. And so the explicitly for people to calculate it, it can be expressed in in this way. So it will only depend on this reference spacetime. And it will be, oh, well, although it looks like it only depends on reference spacetime, but because it is a constant on the 8-gauge orbit, so you can actually pick any spacetime as the reference point. And so it is a constant on the phase space. And people usually call it the two cocycle, satisfied the cocycle condition. And so once we already have the physical phase space with non-degenerate symplectic form, then actually using some of the symplectic geometry language becomes very intuitive. So if in general speaking, we can say that we have the, so since now I already have the diffeomorphism X on the boundary as the physical symmetry of my phase space and associated with the usual our notion of the Hamiltonian here is the bound, the charge associated on the space-time boundary, then we can say that the such a transformation on the phase space given by this phi g act on the phase space. And then the Lie algebra element corresponds to a vector on the phase space given by the a few slides ago that Lie derivative expression. So under gauge transformation of a vector field on the phase space would correspond to the adjoint action of G inverse on the Lie algebra. And so then the existence of the non-trivial central extension in such a symptotic symmetry charge algebra is essentially a non-equivalence of the charge under this symmetry transformation. So in the symplectic manifold, in the symplectic geometry language, such a construction of boundary charge is essentially called a moment map, which is a systematic way of finding the conserved quantity of given symmetry. And so it's an operator from the phase space to the dual Lie algebra element. Why we need such a complexity of saying it, because in this way one can separate the vector field with this map of charge that, so this whole function is my Hamiltonian. So given any arbitrary vector field in this Lie algebra, so this Q is an operator of moment map if for any vector field in the Lie algebra, one can find that the delta of this interior product is related with the symplectic form contracted with the vector field. And then the existence of this non-trivial two cocycle is arises from the non-commutative of this diagram that I do a symmetry transformation, my Lie group element act on my phase space. I do a transformation, and then I define my moment map to this phase space that map me to the dual Lie algebra space. Or I define the moment map first, and then do the symmetry transformation, which is the co-joint action, and it does not close. And it does not, so when we write this out, slightly expanded a bit. This informally, it looks like a covariant derivative acting on the charge in the sense that I transform the point on my phase space. So the difference of I transform between the different point minus I rotate this vector that corresponds to my symmetry transformation. So this is as if like a connection term, and this is like the D term, and the such a transformation does not vanish. And so it was puzzling for me first why this looks like a covariant derivative. But probably one aspect of the answer one can see it is that in the geometrical quantization, so there one needs to first define the pre-quantization that corresponds to this symplectic manifold. And in this approach of geometrical quantization, the symplectic form is actually the curvature of the line bundle when you define the pre-quantization. And the simple, oh, Okay, so here I jumped a bit. Symplectic potential acts like a connection. So the non-invariant here might can be mapped to the obstruction on the line bundle.
I'm a bit confused about the you chose a background, right, to do these things, some G bar that you
are using. Oh yes, yeah. Yes.
So K depends, so if I change my G bar, is K going to change?
So yeah, very good question. So with changing the reference field's charge, the K can so the absolute value of the K will depend on the my absolute value of given a reference space time, but whether it's the K itself is non-zero or not, that's what's physically important. So then it signals the non-trivial cohomology on the phase space. And so the K in general can shift, but once one expanded in the algebra and read out what's the correspondence, so like in three asymptotic 3D case, what's the coefficient corresponds to the centrally extended Virazoro part, and then read out that central charge. Is fixed. And actually in Karlik's one paper discussed about this shifting of L0 of the shifting the vacuum energy, how it changed the central term that's proportional to the central charge part. And so actually one very sufficient condition, this is like a very trivially one can show, is that If my symplectic form can be expressed as a variation of symplectic potential on my whole phase space, so in gravity case will be given a hyper well with choosing the Cauchy surface, my symplectic form can always be written in this way, and plus my symplectic potential is gauge invariant. If with these two conditions at the same time. There is no central extension arises. So this is like the different value of the central extension will be like in a completely different class with this case that the Poisson algebra is isomorphic to the Lie algebra. And hence, in the case that we know physically with the asymptotic algebra arises have the Virazoro as the subalgebra or BMS3 as the algebra, it needed to break at least one of these two conditions to get the non-trivial central term. And so if we write the symplectic potential, because in the covariant phase space formulation, we defined the symplectic form of the phase space in this way. So the subtlety comes from the generically this gauge invariance of the symplectic potential. So if it is not gauge invariant, means I do a Lie derivative on a vector field on the phase space, it's non-vanishing. One can still absorbing, so if one naively gets this, one can still absorbing this non-invariance by a total vary. Okay, I need to be careful of the time. So this is part of the ambiguity of the symplectic potential allowed, that sometimes one can absorb, redefine the symplectic potential and absorb this non-gauge invariance, which will, so absorbing this part will correspond to the redefinition of my reference charge. However, if the still there's a generically non-invariance, then we can express this xi theta as the boundary charge plus something not invariant. So if there's no symplectic, if there's no central extension, then we will just have the Q as Hamiltonian like this. And then the central expansion can be expressed as the volume form as by the parametrization of the non-engaged invariant of the symplectic potential. However, as many of you know that there's many people in Parameter Institute have developed the diffeomorphism edge modes. So with the presence of boundary, we know that generically symplectic potential are not gauge invariant. And the gauge mode, edge mode phase space is constructing did from adding this boundary term, and the construction come from that you added the boundary term and the gauge, doing the gauge transformation, the non-invariant part from the both side comes out, cancels, and hence the physical phase space can be parametrized by the extra degree of freedom given by the boundary symplectic form that compensate in such a transformation. And so we know that, so within, when we add the edge modes, we know that by the, just now, what we know what's the condition that the simple, the central extension will be trivial, that here the central extension wouldn't naturally arise. And so then the crucial point here is that, so such a development actually only have been only developed and consistent when the Kasai is parallel to the boundary. So it's boundary preserving diffeomorphism. And if one only have boundary preserving diffeomorphism, it's not going to come out the central extension. So the central extension actually comes out this, the radial diffeomorphisms counterplay with the boundary diffeomorphism. And actually it is the case in 3D that we need the asymptotic symmetry vector field to have the partial R direction, which vanish on the boundary, but it is normal to the boundary when the R is finite. And the coefficient of this radial transformation is being strongly constrained by the transformation that's parallel, that is surface preserving, so that it will preserve the conformal structure on the boundary. So here, I would say that it is working in progress, that the symplectic potential of edge modes, which corresponds to the normal transformation of the boundary, but it doesn't move the boundary, like it has the normal direction, but vanishing when it's close to the surface. Now, my conjecture now is it wouldn't be possible to be fully localized as a boundary term, so that one wouldn't, so that it is not possible to write down a gauge invariant symplectic potential corresponds to both surface preserving diffeo and the diffeo that's normal to the surface as a localized boundary term. So there has to be bulk term in the symplectic, there has to be bulk term that preserving the diffeo invariant of the symplectic potential. And so, yeah. Oh, so I've, okay, so okay, I think this is the last slide. This is ongoing, a few direction and a few general questions for the audience. Might be nice to think about. One, so one point that we are currently looking at is that this the non-gauge invariant of symplectic potential would correspond to an obstruction of defining of the line bundle in the geometrical quantization. And so that is, might be, so how this is related with getting the anomaly, and we're still not sure yet. And the second point, okay, this I already discussed. And then another direction I didn't write here is that in the last group meeting, many of you might have listened to, I mentioned about what if this corresponds to, are there actually a phase space volume that corresponds to these degrees of freedom, that it will be an infinite phase space volume, and then through quantization, we get the finite entropy, but in the macrocanonical example, this phase space volume might be proportional to exponential of the square root of C. And so actually in the literature more than 20 years ago, people discussed about the co-joint orbit of Virazoro as a symplectic manifold. And I naively checked the volume, so far it doesn't match yet, it's only naively, so one wouldn't expect, so the density after we quantizing the Virazoro co-joint orbit is directly corresponds to the volume of the phase space. But it would be nice that such a simple relation that exists. And in the private discussion, Carlib have already tried something very similar. And yeah, you can ask Carlib if you are interested in that direction.
It also doesn't quite work.
And so another point like I'm very curious about is, so this, how does this non-equivalence of the symmetry charge or this anomaly corresponds to diffeomorphism that's normal to the boundary, corresponds to the breaking of conformal symmetry and give temperature on the CFT, related to with our understanding of the entanglement entropy? Because the area law of entanglement entropy is very generic and very intuitive, has been well studied, but so far, probably apart from in some holographic C theorem, I do not see non-asymptotic ADS relation that I can relate this mechanism of black hole microstate counting with the entanglement entropy. They naively, from the surface, they look like such a different mechanism, but they should converge. And also how this Cardi formula inspired derivation, it fits into our understanding of like discrete approach of quantum gravity, of the black hole entropy formula given by loop quantum gravity and some other approaches. Are they coming from, I think there's a lot of discussion that are they really coming from the same sources or not? And then probably, the concept of non-equivalence and anomaly and eventually kind of related with the renormalization of some finite region of space-time, because the central charge in the CFT is controlling the anomaly in the CFT. And so, yes, this is as much as I want to say right now, and looking forward to your insights. Thank you.
Any questions?
Just one small historical comment. You said at the beginning that Strominger was the first person to use the Cardi formula to derive black hole entropy. And technically that's correct, but Birmingham, Sachs, and Sen did the same thing independently. Their preprint appeared 6 days later. So I think they should get credit.
Yes, thank you so much.
Okay.
Yeah, I will include it when next time I give a talk or when I write a paper about it.
Can I just I mean, this is a general question. I am very uncomfortable with this radial diffeomorphism, their role. I never understand that.
Yeah.
Because to me, if you have a boundary, then the asymptotic symmetry is, I mean, this is a general thing, right? If the diffeomorphism varies on the boundary, then that is not an asymptotic symmetry in any way, because it's zero on the boundary up here. And somehow, nonetheless, you need this in order to get the, as you pointed out, in order to get the non-trivial central charge or all these things to work.
Mm-hmm.
I'm always very uncomfortable with these radial vector fields which are there, but they vanish. Also in the later, in the more recent work of Strominger and Perry and other people, when they, those symmetry vector fields seem extremely contrived to me. So I wonder if anybody else want to comment again.
But in our Lüdenberg, it's with these radial diffeomorphisms which give you the dual field.
It's
a radial diffeomorphisms, well, it's a deformation of the boundary in radial direction, which defines your dual field, which is the Liouville field theorem.
Okay. So it's not an asymptotic symmetry, so you're not getting anything from the asymptotic symmetry.
No, in our Lüdenberg, we actually start things at finite boundary. But then you can derive a dual field theory, and that's really describing the deformation of the boundary and the radial direction.
But is that radial direction a symmetry in the original theory or in the dual theory or anything anywhere like that?
No, it's a degree of freedom.
It's a degree of freedom.
It's a degree of freedom in the dual field theory on a finite boundary.
Okay.
But then, so it's qualitatively different from what I understood to be looking at
yeah,
symmetry algebra. Yeah, it's qualitatively different.
But then you could say if it goes to the dual field theory and it gets a central charge related to the entropy, that the radial diffeomorphisms should have something to do with it.
No. But that's a different, yeah, that's yeah. I'm not.
Any other discussion points, questions? In that case, let's thank our speaker again and we can go.